Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I am totally jacked and pumped, as Pete Carroll might say. Absolutely jacked and pumped. You know why? Because the big, bad Bruins have just gotten a little badder. Miroslav Shatan suits up tonight.
Is it Satan?
For your Boston Bruins. That's right, fans. Satan skates for the Bruins. Oh, wait a second. This isn't Bruins talk? Dang. Oh, that's right. This is Patriots Playbook. Sorry about that. By the way, Shatan,
you went inside the wrong playbook, huh?
I was inside the wrong playbook for a moment. Shatan does suit up tonight for the Bruins, by the way. I don't know if anybody cares, anybody knew that, but yes, Satan skates for the Bruins. Now, the question is, can Satan catch a football? Because we might need him this weekend. Hey, you got to take whatever help you can get when it's all about winning a playoff game, right? Welcome inside Patriots Playbook, everybody. I'm John Rook. Man, there's just so much to get to. I don't even know where to start, so we'll just kind of like plow ahead. And, we're falling apart here. Fred took me apart here. Hold on. There we go. All right. Now we're working. That was bizarre. Pop! Pop goes the microphone. You'd think I've been around these things before. Almost like I never had. Yeah, exactly. All right, so here we go. Just a couple of quick takes. Obviously, for those of you that have been a part of our Tuesday programs in the playbook throughout the course of the football season, you know that Tuesdays we generally spend time nitpicking. Affectionately known as Nitpick Tuesday. Because Sunday's game meant absolutely squat to this team, if you feel like you need to nitpick, this is your release point. This is your release valve. By all means, you can fire me off an email, or you can pick up the phone and you can call, and we can go through some of those nitpicks, because they might directly lead to, you know, playoff possibilities, let's say. All right. But in terms of the X's and O's and what might have, where the game might have turned and all that kind of stuff, really, the game, kids, the game meant zero. Patriots are still division champs. Patriots are still hosting a first round game. Just like we talked about all last week, nothing changed. The only thing, of course, that changed is the fact that now you're into the playoff derby. You're into the official second season. You're in the tournament. Without one of your key components on offense. I don't know that I have words to explain how badly, personally, I feel for Wes Welker. Professionally, how I feel for Wes Welker. Probably the same as all of you who are Patriots fans. Even media types, and media types around these parts here in New England, as I'm sure you're aware, do not give glowing recommendations to most of the athletes. It's usually, hey, what have you done for me lately? And that's all there is to it, which is one of the things I've actually kind of admired about, you know, fandom and the media in this area. It's always been, you know, hey, you got to prove it on the field, on the ice, on the court, whatever, before you get embraced, before you deserve your kudos. And I think that is an honest, actual non-politically correct way to go about it these days, which is one of the things what I love about living here and being a fan here and being in the media here, because it's brutally honest. And yet, I guess admiration, adulation, how many other superlatives, descriptive phrases can we come up with for Wes Welker here? Normally, putting an athlete up on a pedestal here in Boston, in New England, requires, you know, Hall of Fame capability. We save it for the Bill Russells, the Larry Birds, the Bobby Orrs, players of that ilk, right? And yet, those who cover the New England Patriots, especially those who have covered the Patriots over the course of the last 5 to 10 years, realize that what the Patriots have in Wes Welker is something that may not be matched again. Now, true, he has set, the one catch that he had against Houston. He turns, he plants, the knee gives out. And I know Bill Belichick ranted, and we'll hear some of that in case you missed it yesterday. He ranted a little bit about the Houston field conditions yesterday on Patriots Monday on WEEI. And if you missed it, we'll have some of that for you. And coming up a little bit later on in the program today, along with some conference calls to kind of get you ready for, the Baltimore game this week. But the fact is that, the one catch that he did have gave him 123 on the season. Which is an all-time Patriots franchise record, as I'm sure many of you know. Many of you may also know that the 123 catches now tied for the second most receptions by anyone in a single season in NFL history. He ties the record ties the record that he shares with Herman Moore, who also caught 123 balls in 1995 for the Detroit Lions. Second most receptions in a single season in NFL history, Marvin Harrison set the record with the Colts. He had 143 grabs in 2002. Now, stands to reason that if Welker had not missed the two games earlier in the year and had been able to play out the Texan game on Sunday, I think there's every possibility that he would have challenged Marvin Harrison's record. If, through his own, efforts and through, obviously it's going to take a little help from above, I think, here because of the severity of his knee injury. But if he does come back, there's no reason to think that Wes, based on his work ethic and what we've seen out on the field, he stands a good chance of approaching these numbers again. We all said that, it would probably take a while for Tom Brady to get back into shape after his knee injury, and you've seen how that progress has unfolded this year. It's taken him a while. And yes, admittedly, Tom has been banged up a bit this year. There's been, some alleged cracked ribs. There's been an alleged broken finger. And yes, there's been some time that it's taken for him to get used and confidence in his bum knee. He has had a mixed bag of results with that. Although I think we've seen from the beginning of the year to now, in spite of the current ailments, the knee really is no longer a problem, which I think is something that we can all be thankful for and grateful for. But you've seen the progression that it's taken for Brady. You can expect at least that for Wes Welker when he does come back. And I do believe he's still young enough in his career. He's going to come back. I think there's a very strong possibility he misses all of or a majority of next season, but it would not surprise me at some point in time, and again, this all depends on when he actually has his surgery. It's unfortunate, that it didn't happen 6 weeks ago because he'd already been operated on by now. Or, for instance, Brady had his injury happen very first game of the year. And, of course, it took Brady pretty close to one calendar year before he could actually step out on the field. I mean, he did come to camp and take part of some things. I think you can gather that it will take 9 to 12 months, even with the workaholic that Wes Welker is, and we know him to be, and the professional that he has always been. And so if you go 9 to 12 months away, you're talking about he doesn't even sniff the football field until probably sometime in September or October. I don't even sniff it. His training will be nothing but, cardiovascular, running, and probably cycling, pushing pedals on a bicycle until they clear him for actual football duty. And then, of course, there's the whole, okay, now you got to run, you got to stop, you got to turn, you got to cut, you got to jump, and it's much, much different, I think, for a wide receiver who depends on his wheels than it is for a quarterback who sits in the pocket and throws the football. Much different. There'll be much more demand placed on Welker's body, frankly, I think, than Brady had, although, you can say Brady's, certainly susceptible to open shots where he can't necessarily defend himself. I would argue the same thing for Welker. He's got a possession receiver whose job it is to go over the middle and take a pounding from defensive backs. And once he does get back out on their field, guys are going to target him. It's just the nature of the beast. You see a wounded, animal out on the field, you know, most hunters are going to go after that wounded animal. Why? Because it's easy prey. And I think that's the way Welker is unfortunately going to be marked. So he will have to be physically ready before he gets back out there. Don't put it past Welker. Don't put it past him. I don't think it's an impossibility that he returns at some point next year. But I'd have to say it's highly unlikely if you give the generally considered thought process at the, you know, in terms of the rehabilitation, which is usually the full due course is 1 year, 12 calendar months. So anyway, that's at least a little bit of my take on the whole Wes Welker story. When he went down, I have to admit, my first thought was, oh, crap, here goes the season. Admittedly, you know, the only other person on this team that I would think that anybody would actually say that about would be Tom Brady at this stage of the game, right? But that was my first impression. Now, clearly, Julian Edelman had a great game against Houston statistically. He had 10 grabs. He had over 100 yards. And I think everybody expects that Edelman is going to be the quote-unquote guy for Wes Welker. Can he be a suitable guy replacing Wes Welker? Well, time is going to tell. I think we all just kind of feel like, hey, we're going to plug him in, and that'll be that. Yet we know that Julian Edelman is not Wes Welker. Is he of the same build and mold? Maybe. Maybe. Does he run the same routes? Well, that's what makes Welker so incredibly good at what he does. That's why he's an all-pro wide receiver. Because he has a knack for finding open space. And yet, you're asking a guy who has never been a receiver before in his life until this year. He was a quarterback. Maybe, though, Edelman can use that to his advantage, because as a quarterback and largely a running quarterback at Kent State, as you might recall, and we've talked about this year, maybe he can know where he should be as a receiver based on a quarterback's way of thinking. Who knows? We're going to start to find out this weekend when the Ravens come in for the playoff game. So I wanted to give you just a little bit of a – I hate that it sounds a little bit like a postmortem here, but I just felt like I had to kind of pick that up because I did not want to – leave unsaid anything about Welker, what he has meant to this team, what he has done record-wise, what he is, you know, his accomplishments. We always bash guys for their lack of ability and their lack of effort and, you know, for stupid plays that they make. I mean, we've bashed a lot of guys here. We nitpick on everybody on Tuesdays here inside the playbook. That's what we do. That's why we're here. But I didn't want to do that today, especially not when it comes to Welker. His 1,348 receiving yards this year is the third highest receiving total in Patriots history. Moss set the record with 1,493 in 97. Stanley Morgan had 1,491 in 1986. Is there any doubt in your mind that had he played the games that he missed, that he would have set that record too? No doubt in my mind. None at all. 8.8 receptions per game. Second highest in NFL history for a single season behind the 8.9 per game that Harrison had in 2002. I mean, these are just remarkable things that will probably go now into the archives. They'll be shoved under the rug until such a time exists that Wes Welker actually returns to the gridiron. And when that will be, who knows? This could change a lot of things philosophically for the Patriots. I think it stands to reason now that they've got to go into the offseason thinking we need help at wide receiver. They probably were thinking that way anyway, based on their lack of finding what they would consider a solid third guy, and that's one of the things we've banged on a lot, and we've nitpicked on a lot here inside the playbook this year. The fact that, you know, we just... You know, they made a mistake on Joey Callaway. There's no other way about it. You can't describe it any other way. And so that's left them kind of grasping at straws at possible fill-ins and mixing and matching for the third receiver. Now, whether or not you think a guy like Sam Aiken can only be that guy or not, well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's fair to say now that since your depth has taken a severe hit, that somehow, some way, you've got to go looking for a receiver. If not through the draft, then through, you know, free agent route somehow this offseason. So you might want to start putting that in the back of your bonnet if you're a draft Nick. And if you're looking at free agents, as I know many of you try to do, and figure out how your team can improve itself in the offseason, receiver's got to be a place you look at. You know, certainly there are many other areas of need. It seems like this year there are more areas of need for this franchise than we've seen in recent years. Why is that? I would ask you why that is. I mean, I realize they unloaded a lot of veteran players and they've tried to turn over and go young, perhaps quicker than many of us would have liked it to have happened, as I've banged on a lot this year. But I don't know. Could they use help on the line? Sure. Linebacker? Absolutely. Secondary? Positively. I guess really the only place that they really don't need help that I can think of right now of an immediate nature would be the offensive line. Everywhere else, there's now a definitive need. Why else would, you know, I mean, you could certainly say quarterback might be, but, I mean, could they use a third guy? Well, I think we all know that most teams carry three somehow. And there is a reason why Brian Hoyer was out there, so says Bill Belichick, you know, late in the game for that, you know, potential winning drive on Sunday, because he frankly told Tom Brady that he wanted to see what he could do in this situation, knowing that this game meant nothing. Did it upset you? It might have. Did it upset me? Yeah, a little bit. But we're not paid to make those decisions. The coach has to be the one with the bigger picture view. Frankly, you know, if I were a coach, I'd have a little bit more myopic view. I'd be a little concerned about now as opposed to, let's see if this guy can play quarterback. I'm not arguing with the call. I don't really even question the call in circumspect. I really don't. I understand to an extent why he made it, because winning the game against Houston really didn't mean anything. Really didn't. I mean, you know, that's one thing the NFL's also got to fix. I saw Roger Waddell. I saw him. Who was he interviewed by? It was the CBS game. It was Gumbel and Deardorff. Right? Yeah. Gumbel, yeah. So that was the, was that the, which game were they doing on Sunday?
Pittsburgh-Miami.
Pittsburgh-Miami. Thank you. That's why I was, yeah, because that's the game. I was in New York on Sunday, and that's the game that actually CBS was feeding the New York market. And the commissioner was there, and, you know, they were going through the, you know, all right, so this is what we've got. I'm sure you're happy. You've got all these teams that are still in position to get in the playoffs, yada, yada. It's all worked out for you. And yet, actually, there was a pretty good question asked by both of the guys of the commissioner about how do you incent teams to play their players in essentially meaningless football games? And because even though we kind of knew that the Patriots wouldn't be playing with a completely full deck, so to speak, against Houston, the big story was is that the Bengals were going to lay down against the Jets, and that's exactly what they did. They laid down. They curled up in the fetal position. They laid down. They allowed the Jets to run roughshod over them, and that's how the Jets earned their place. There's no question in my mind the Jets backed their butts right into the playoffs. Now, I personally think Cincinnati, laying down as they did, that's going to hurt them. Even though the Jets have to go to Cincinnati for their game this weekend, I kind of like the Jets' chances because they're full of confidence now. I mean, I realize Cincinnati probably didn't want to show them anything. You know, Cincinnati didn't want to risk anything. But you can't go and get thrashed 37-0 by somebody. That's just weak. And so the question was, how do you incent teams to continue to play as if it were a regular season game when they know full well that there's, you know, it's meaningless. And the commissioner actually had, you know, some decent ideas. And I know that you've probably seen some things talked about on the internet and some of the searching that you've done and some of the stories that you might have read. One of the things they do, though, is they're talking about doing, which I think has some merit, is giving teams incentive to play through the last regular season game by awarding extra draft picks. I'm not sure how they would determine whether or not a team, you know, could warrant having extra draft picks. I guess probably they'd just say a team that has clinched a playoff spot before the end of the regular season. And unless a player – now, I still don't know, though, what would keep a team from saying, okay, starter X, starter Y, starter Z, oh, and starter Q, R, and T are all hurt. And listing them on the injury report during the week and just keeping them out for the week because they're listed on the injury report, whether they're injured or not. Because the injury report in itself, as we all know, is a stinking joke in this league. It's a joke. We can't glean any information, which is why we largely have stopped talking about it here on the playbook and certainly on PFW. Because it doesn't mean anything.
And the fact that it comes out at 4 and you're off the air.
Well, but you know what, though? A few years ago, Jason, you remember this as well, up until last year, we would actually wait until 4:05 or whenever it would come down on the air live and read it to you live here on the program at 4:05 or 4:06 and whenever it would come across. Because, you know, up until a few years ago, it actually meant something. Now it means squat because you don't know what's right and what's wrong. You don't know what's truthful and what's deceitful. You don't know. And I'm not calling people liars here, okay? That's not my intent. My intent is to point out that the system is stupid. We don't get anything out of it. You don't get anything out of it. No one gets anything out of it. So unless you fix that system, the system for draft picks being awarded to teams to give them incentive to continue to play out the regular season after they've already clinched a spot in the playoffs, that is also going to have to be addressed. I don't see it working any other way. Otherwise, what you're going to have is more Belichickian moves, for lack of a better phrase here, and all of a sudden you're going to see names appear on the injury report leading up to that last regular season game after you've already clinched that of guys who haven't been on the list all year. If you decide you want to hold out somebody, you're going to hold them out. That's what Cincinnati did this week against the Jets.
What are they going to do when they add two more games?
Well, when they add two more games, that's going to be a whole other ball of wax, isn't it? By the way, I do think that's coming. I do think they've still got to figure out a way to work it out. I think it'll be a part of the negotiating here with the Players Association. Nobody from the players' point of view really wants to see 18 regular season games. I don't know how you feel about it. I personally am. I sort of have mixed feelings about it because it's clear, and we're kind of getting off to some other things here. But hey, as long as we brought up the subject here, you know. And by the way, your thoughts on any of these things that I'm talking about here are welcome. Webradio@patriots.com 508-543-7482 the telephone number. We are going to end up sliding to 18 games eventually. I would advocate 17 and making the odd game, the international game, if you will, and giving, you know, half of the teams in the league a chance to host an international game and the other half a chance to travel, and then you kind of flip it for the other year. And you could figure out a way to do that and probably work it out where you could play 17 and 3. But you just have to – everybody would not be equal, of course, except for over a two-year period. I don't know that the players would approve that either. So I think what we're going to end up getting to, and I think it will be, again, a part of the negotiating process here, we'll eventually get to an 18-game regular season and two preseason games because, as we all know, there are really only about two preseason games that are worth looking at, much less going to. They're a farce. They're a sham. They're not representative of football, and yet, you know, regular season prices still get charged for these games. Now, this won't make the owners happy. I don't think the owners will be happy for this either because they get a chance to charge those same prices and they don't have to pay salaries to these players except for the stipend they pay them during the preseason. Their salaries, their multi-million dollar contracts, some of them do not kick in until week one of the season, of the regular season. So through training camp, the players all get the same stipend, training camp stipend. So they're all making, what, a couple grand a week, I think is what it is? You know, they may be on the high end of it.
I'd take it.
Yeah, no kidding. I think we'd all take that. But nevertheless, it's not the same as making, you know, $12 million a year if you're lucky enough to be one of those players. So, you know, you can see then the profit margin for the owners is huge in the preseason, which is why you see those prices charged. You know, unless there's somehow that, you know, they come to some kind of agreement among the owners that, you know, all right, we're going to half our ticket prices. We're going to give something back to the fans, which, frankly, I don't see happening. Then you know, this is what we're going to come to. It's going to come to 18 regular season games. And it'll probably take some strong-arming by the league in order to do that. But we're working our way toward that. Won't happen next year. May not happen for 2011. could happen thereafter. All right, so I've touched on a bunch of different things here. I want you guys to jump in. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Nitpicks, sure, absolutely. We can. If you've got nitpicks from the game, if you got nitpicks about the game this week against the Ravens, that's fine too. You have some thoughts on Wes Welker, about his rehab, about Edelman being a potential replacement, that's fine. Anything for the Patriots in terms of their needs, looking to the future, that's fine. That's also on the table here. Matchup problems with the Ravens, even though the Patriots have already won against Baltimore this year, that's we can get into all of this. It's all on the table today. Absolutely all on the table. Why? Well, because, frankly, I think we all know this could be the last week of the season. And if it's the last week of the season, it's the last week of the playbook. It may make some of you happy. It may make others of you disappointed, probably more happy than disappointed, but that's okay. PFW in Progress has off-season mode. Our off-season mode here inside the playbook is that we go dark until the next football season gets here. That's the way it's operated. This is our ninth year to do this show, and we are basically an in-season-only program. You know, the PFW guys can certainly cover and usually do very well the off-season moves and things like that around the NFL. And if we have to do that, then that's what we do.
Well, maybe the loyal listeners of the playbook can stage another coup the same way they got us a podcast for this show and so make a little push to bring Rook in once a week.
You know what? I'd be totally up for that. As long as there's, you know, a little something in it for you know who, then I'm all good with that.
Lunch.
It would take at least that, I think. So anyway, it's all on the table here as we have our Tuesday edition of the Playbook. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. We'll get to you some of your emails. We'll have some conference calls coming up in hour number two in the Playbook today.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
I mean, wherever he's been, whatever he's done, I mean, his percentage is got it's like a meteorologist.
Well, I just the only thing I'll say is at least he put his name on it, which doesn't happen in a lot of cases. Yeah. At least he put his name on it, and so I'll put my name on it and say, you know, he's like he usually is. He's 100% wrong.
That was Bill Belichick yesterday on the big show on Patriots Monday on WEEI, reacting, of course, to Charlie Casserly's report over the weekend that Brady has cracked ribs, Brady has a broken finger. We're going to try to get Charlie Casserly in the playbook today, and it was basically really to talk about the game more than anything else. If the subject of his prediction or his statement, his report on Sunday came up, so be it. But he emailed back and said that, he's going to stand by his story and he doesn't have anything else more to say about it, and didn't say whether or not he would join us or not. That was the rather short, tersely worded email that we got in return from Charlie Casserly. So anyway, I just wanted to pass that along to you and let you know that we're certainly interested in trying to talk a little bit more about it. I'm not questioning the man's motives or his sources or what have you. It's entirely possible that, you know, his sources are solid and either fed him some wrong information or, you know, who knows? I don't think Charlie Casserly would make it up. I really don't. Charlie knows his value, his worth to CBS is for him to be right. And CBS would not have hired him and will not hire someone like that unless they know this person to have legitimate inside contacts at, if not all of the stops, certainly most of the stops along the way. Now, you know, Coach Belichick is certainly, you know, he has a right to say what he says. That's fine. If he says Charlie is completely wrong about all of that, that's fine. All I would tell you is that, you know, Tom Brady said on Monday with Dennis and Callahan, if you didn't hear it, I feel fine. When they asked him specifically about cracked ribs, broken finger, I feel fine. Now, you tell me what that means. I personally believe it means he's avoiding the subject altogether. Usually, and I'm going to give you a little insight into journalism here, okay, for those that might not understand why reporters and why people do what they do. Now, granted, Charlie Casserly is not what I would call a legitimate journalist. But he is operating as one. He is operating under the guise of being a journalist because that's what CBS has hired him for, information and information gathering. And you generally, as a journalist, and this is what I teach my students, and this is what you normally learn in J school, that you don't go with a story unless you have a minimum of two independent sources from each other, both confirming the same details. It's that simple. You have one person on one side, another person on the other side, both saying the same thing. Chances are you've got a story. And that's usually a bare minimum to go with. My guess is that Charlie probably had that. But I think what we all have to realize as consumers, whether you listen to, you know, web radio like this program, or you're listening to ESPN, or you listen to sports talk radio, or you're reading online, especially blogs, okay? Especially blogs. And it's not to, it's not to undercut legitimate bloggers that are out there. But most legitimate bloggers are not journalists. Some journalists also blog. Those are the ones that you should probably look to for the most accurate information because they know how to do it. Doesn't mean that a blogger who hasn't been a newspaper reporter or a TV or a radio person before doesn't mean they can't do it. But my guess is that more often than not, they don't understand journalistic principles. And this is where we get the muddying of the internet with the journalistic world. And you know, consumer beware is all I can tell you. The answer is always somewhere in the middle. That's a safe bet. And you can use that barometer with just about every story that you see. Other than who wins and loses, it's cut and dried. You got a winner, you got a loser. But if there's a story that allows you any sort of conjecture, any sort of opinion, any sort of back and forth, if it's an inflammatory story, if it's a rumor, if it's, you know, like the whole Tiger Woods thing that's going on, I mean, chances are the answer, the truth, is always somewhere in the middle from what you're hearing reported from both sides. And so, is Brady banged up? Yeah, sure. He didn't deny that. Everybody gets banged up over the course of a 16-game regular season. No question. Specifically, does he have broken ribs? Well, he's not going to say. Why? Well, because Baltimore's going to target that. We all know that's why the injury reports, as I ranted on just a little while ago, the injury reports are vague like they are because teams don't want other teams, the opposition, game planning against or for or targeting injured players. In this day and age, when it's so important to win, teams will do anything to win. They're trying to take the injury out of the equation. That's why that's a long, forget the privacy rule. I know that we have HIPAA laws and all that stuff going on. Forget that. I don't think to a man, anybody in the locker room really cares who knows if he's hurt or not. It's a product. It's a byproduct of playing football. I think in Lawrence Maroney's case, as we didn't learn last year, he had a fractured shoulder. And yet we're banging on him here as being weak and worthless and, hey, take a hike. We don't want you here anymore. And we've done a lot of these things. And yet nobody knew he had a fractured shoulder until after the season was over. And so in this instance, this is where keeping quiet hurt someone to the point where I'm not certain that Lawrence Maroney has a future in this organization. Maybe the Patriots are saying the same thing as well. It can also work the other side, and I think Maroney is a good test case for that. The other side is you don't want teams to game plan. You don't want teams to, you know, target someone who's got a bum knee by taking a cheap shot out there. You know, do we remember the late 1980s when there were actual bounties put on players' heads out on the field? I mean, you remember the old Cowboys-Eagles series? Saw ESPN do a sort of a recapture of this the other night, and it brought back all kinds of memories. You remember Buddy Ryan putting bounties out on some of the Cowboys' heads of the players back in the 1980s? It happened. Chris Carter, in fact, on ESPN, even admitted as such. He was a part of that Eagles team back early in his career as a wide receiver. And he said, we had bounties. We absolutely had bounties for those Cowboy games. $200 if you took this guy out. $300 if you took this guy out, you know, which, of course, is illegal, a sin, and obviously could cost you your career if you got caught doing something like that today, but it happened. And the vagaries of the injury report largely are byproducts of that kind of thought process. You don't want people taking shots. So, all right, let me get to some emails here. And I want to enjoy this one for a moment because it comes from our good friend Strippers. And if you wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the, you know, national championship game, I don't know, is Oklahoma anywhere now? Oklahoma's not anywhere near that game, I didn't think. No. Strippers, any of that? He's an Texas and Alabama on Thursday night. Strippers sends me this note. He says, no team had less than 4 losses this season. What the hell does that mean? Texas barely beat an injured OU team with Landry Jordan's quarterbacking. What the hell does that mean? They need a second to beat Nebraska. Okay, so? Colt versus OU in Nebraska? 1 touchdown and 4 picks? Okay. 140 yards passing? And then he laughs. And he says, Stoops visited Saban. Texas loses by 14. You know, Strippers, I would actually take you seriously if I thought you had 1 ounce of football intelligence. I don't think you do.
He's an
We have good fun at Stripper's expense here. And he's a good sport for doing this. But he knows he's writing this stuff just to goad me into an argument here on the air. I'm not going to fall for it, pal. Because if you don't see the merits of these two teams in their own right and how Texas matches up with Alabama, Alabama has a power offense, but Texas has speed to burn on defense. Did you watch any of the Fiesta Bowl last night? I was disappointed, obviously, that TCU lost, my Fort Worth Horned Frogs. But if you managed to watch any of it, both of those teams had lightning-fast defenses. I was really impressed with the speed that Boise State had. I hadn't seen a Boise State game from start to finish all year long. I'd seen clips. I'd caught bits and pieces of some games that were on the tube. I had not watched an entire Boise State game from start to finish until last night. I was impressed. I would tell you that I think TCU suffered more for their layoff than Boise State suffered because both teams were off over a month. TCU, I think, gone 39 days between playing games, which is extraordinary. Boise State, I think, was almost that long, like 32. But it was a week less than TCU. And I think that made all the difference in the world. But Boise State was quick. Texas defense is as fast as any defense in the country. And as long as they can make sure that the tackles are secured and the linebackers play the run, I don't see, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't see Alabama beating them over the top. Texas secondary is very good. Or do you not know that, Strippers? The question is whether or not Texas offense was struggled against Oklahoma. That was earlier in the year. They've run up 50 and 60 on teams since then, Strippers. It's really whether or not they struggled the last couple of games. Well, they didn't struggle against A&M. They just defense struggled. But whether or not they can score against Alabama's defense. All I'll tell you is that the money's coming in on Texas. The line was 5. It's down to 3.5. So, Strippers, if you're willing to give a little something here, I'll take your 14, pal. I'll take your 14.
I think you guys should make a bet.
I'm that's what I'm saying right here, right now. He's giving me 14.
Since you and Christina couldn't have one, seeing as how Florida steamrolled in their bowl game.
Exactly the point. I'm totally and I'm prepared. Strippers has offered up 14 points. I'm willing to take that right now. What can you afford to lose, Strippers?
Bet you he could set you up with something nice on your next college road trip.
My next college road trip. Yeah, and probably saying, all right, what can you give me in return that I don't already have? Probably nothing. Probably nothing. So at any rate, you just consider that, all right? And if we do have shows next week, then, we'll deal with it then. But, I think Texas matches up fairly well. Will they win the game? I honestly feel as good about this game as I felt about any all year for Texas. I actually feel better about this game than I did against OU. OU is a rivalry game. And I don't care how good a team is or how bad the other team is. In rivalry games, Strippers, again, this is where you're not showing any football knowledge. You throw all the stats out the window. The game is played on emotion. Yeah, I've got to have some talent to compete, but it's all about emotion and which team is going to make fewer mistakes. That game, Oklahoma made more mistakes than Texas. That's why they lost. That's why they lost. They made more mistakes. Have you seen the series standings with Texas and Alabama, Strippers? 8 games between the two teams, and I believe Texas is 7-0-1. Not even the great Bear Bryant could beat Texas.
8.
So the last time Texas and Alabama played was the Cotton Bowl of 1982, and I was right there on the sidelines across from the Houndstooth hat himself. And saw a quarterback by the name of Robert Brewer lead Texas to a win over the Crimson Tide that day.
We're going! Come on, everybody!
It was a lot of fun. So anyway, all right. So yeah,
the game or the streaking?
Both, actually, to be quite honest with you. Both of them. It was all good. All right, so Strippers, there you go. Gauntlet's been thrown. I doubt you'll accept it. Andrew sends email here, and he says, is Maroney going to play this week? I understand that he has had some fumble problems this year, but I am still a fan. And I think we really need him in the backfield of these playoffs. I think that running game is going to be the key to victory this postseason. Andrew is in Utah. Thanks, Andrew. I don't know. We'll wait and see. You know what the injury report says, or the shall I say the participation report says tomorrow after practice. If he's listed, he was obviously inactive this last week. Nobody that I know knows whether or not he's actually got a legitimate injury. I would imagine that if anybody is physically able to play at all, regardless of their penchant for fumbling, that it'll be all hands on deck this week. So to answer your question, Andrew, I would expect him to be active. Obviously, some guys have to be inactive because they can't suit everybody up. But I would think that Maroney, if he's physically able to go, in other words, if they're not trying to hide an injury like they did last year with his broken shoulder, then I would think that he would merit still activation over Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis. And that's taken nothing away from law firm, but quite frankly, I mean, it's what you're paying Maroney to do. He was your number one draft pick. He should be out there. You know, were they upset that he fumbled on the goal line 2 weeks ago against Jacksonville? Well, of course they were. I can't believe, though, that he would have been inactive this week just based on that fumble. It's got to be more to the story. Has to be. Otherwise, that's pretty... don't you think that's a little vindictive? Well, I'm sorry, strippers. That word may be too big for you. You know, don't you think that's a little mean? Maybe that's better. Web radio at patriots.com. Picking on strippers now, but he's not going to answer my challenge here. So, why should we go any further? All right. George from South Carolina says, what's your take on this, John? We have the 2011 Seymour pick and 3 second round picks this year. So why not trade the 2011 first rounder and our lowest second rounder this year for a first round pick this year? Then I'd like to see the Pats pick up Brandon Graham, a pass rusher from Michigan, Sean Witherspoon, a playmaking linebacker from Missouri, Brandon Spikes, or Sergio Kendall. This depends on the slotted picks, of course. Then in the second round, address wide receiver with, say, Demaryius Thomas, Brandon LaFell, Jordan Shipley, or Denario Alexander. If we're unable to trade up, I think you select Sean Witherspoon or Brandon Graham with the first round pick because the other two won't be there. In the second round, grab a wide receiver from the group above and look heavily into Eric Norwood, who's an outside linebacker defensive end from South Carolina. Those are all good names. Most of them I know. I'm not terribly familiar with Norwood from South Carolina, although I watched a little of their game against UConn, the bowl game the other day. I don't know. If you take the 2011 first rounder and a second rounder and trade in the first round this year, because there's so much to be decided on 2011 possibly still being an uncapped season. Nobody knows what financially that 2011 pick is going to be worth, George. So in that regard, I don't see anybody trading a sure thing, although this could be an uncapped year too. Hold on. How they got to do this? It means that, okay, all right. So, all right, that's how they do it. Okay, so that being the case, sorry, just I'm looking into something here before I open up my mouth and say something wrong here. It happens enough. Try to get it right the first time, or at least the second time. Let's look at it from, say, for lack of a better team, Kansas City's point of view. All right, they've got a high first-round pick this year. They're still going to have a high first-round pick. Would they consider taking the Patriots' first round and a second round as opposed to their first-round pick this year? Or you take the 2011 first-rounder for next year's pick? I don't know that I'm going to see a team, especially a team that would have a high enough pick, trade away this year's high pick for the possibility of one next year when it's going to be a lower slot. Does that make any sense? Especially with everything that's on the line in terms of, it was so much up in the air over the finances of the NFL right now. I don't know. I don't see any other team doing that. You know, maybe if you added, a couple of extra picks in addition to this year's first rounder, or, 2011's first rounder, possibly. But trading away a future for one this year? See, then you're going to have the other team's fans banging on them for trading away a pick this year for one next year. when they have immediate needs to address. That's why I don't think this pick works. Teams that would be in position that I'd say would be in the upper half of the draft this year, they're not trading that pick away. And really, unless you could get something like that this year, why would you trade away what you have? You're at 25 this year. You're telling me you're going to take the 25 this year. If you took the 25 this year and next year for a higher slot this year, okay, maybe. But then it's a two-for-one deal, and I'm not sure that that's really a smart move either. I like some of the players that you've mentioned, however, George. I see teams much less willing, unless we have some sort of finality to the labor negotiations going on between the players and the owners in this offseason, unless we have something decided before the draft in April, my guess is you see fewer draft picks traded. Fewer. They won't completely disappear. There will still be some trading. There will still be some business as usual. I kind of feel like, though, because of the uncertainty over slots and what you're going to have to pay and maybe being an uncapped year coming up and all that kind of stuff coming up, I have to feel like there will be fewer draft choices floating around out there. Because people don't know what those draft choices are going to be worth. Who knows? Nobody knows. It's largely unsaid here. All right, so at any rate, good thoughts, though. Good thoughts, though. Thank you, George. Oh, looky here. Did we get an answer from the man? All right, hold on just a second. This came, he says, Stripper says, I'll take Bama and -4. Oh, come on! No way. You just offered me 14 on the last email, and now you're going to shrink it by 10? What, you don't have any confidence? Oh, please. He says, if I win, I brag about it until October. If you win, I buy you lunch. It's not even worth the email that you wrote it on, Strippers. I'm not taking that deal. You said 14. Bama wins by 14. Put your money where your mouth or your keyboard is. Then we'll talk. Come on. Come on. How about that for a weasel? Is that great or what? Take Bama -4. That's manning up, baby. That is manning up. Bama 14. Oh, yeah, I'll give you -4. You're real confident, aren't you, baby? I'm not going to that's like taking candy from a baby. No way. Forget it. 14, we're talking. All right, let's see. Here's another one. I know that this hasn't been the best season for the Patriots this year, but I just can't find myself buying into them losing this Sunday. There's been so much talk about the lack of leadership in the locker room and the team, and I agree that we have lost some great leadership. However, we still have Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who I cannot rule out in the playoffs. I might be wrong, but I think that this team plays best when it has something to prove, when they are in some way or another the underdog. Remember, we didn't win the Super Bowl during our best season ever in 2007. We can still pull this off. I know that we have room to improve, but I really think that we can do this still with the team we currently have. You know, that might be one of the best positive attitude emails that we've gotten about the Patriots all year long in the playbook. Honestly. And that one came a little bit earlier from Andrew in Utah. So I got to give him credit. You know, that's spoken like a true Patriots fan. That's spoken to someone who obviously believes in the coaches, believes in the players that they have, knows, I think, relatively well the current situation that this current Patriots team is in, heading into this playoff game with Baltimore this Sunday. You know, okay, there's nothing wrong with something that's good and honest and positive. Maybe we should have, you know, instead of Nitpick Tuesday, maybe we should have Positive Tuesday. Maybe we should flip it around to the other side. Should we do that, Jason? We try Positive Tuesday? Will you be positive? I think we might try that in the next hour, last hour of the show. We might try Positive Tuesday. Liar. You know, you don't want to do that?
I'm fine with that. Are you?
You know, it would be a little out of character for me. You know, PFW guys call me Mr. Negativity. But Eric did give me, you know, due props.
And all this negativity that's in this town sucks.
By the way, Rick Pitino comes back to New England tomorrow night as the Louisville Cardinals face the Providence Friars. I'm anxious to see what kind of signs might be in the stands. welcoming Coach Rick back.
I apologize for that indiscretion.
No, I think maybe there'd be one like, table for two, Rick? Ha ha! Or something like that, you know? Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. Okay. We like to digress a lot on this show. What were we talking about?
You wanted to be positive, and then you took a shot at Patino.
I took a shot at Patino. Come on. That's just my style. I take shots at everybody. People take shots at me. It's all fun. It's all fun. Did he send me another answer here? Okay. Oh, okay. Bama, 13.5. Lunch is the bet. What happened to the 14?
You're arguing over half a point?
Absolutely.
You're ridiculous.
What's wrong with that? He said 14. Did he not say 14?
The first email did say 14.
Yes, it did. Thank you. I'm not lying here. It said 14. I'm holding out for 14. If I get 14, it's on. We're on. I'm appealing to his manhood now. Man up. You said 14. If you're going to backtrack from that by a half a point and somehow, by a fluke, Bama wins by 14, he'll be bragging till October. I'm not going to allow that to happen. Why should I do that? It's because I would have backed down. Now, I'm sticking with what I say. Do I think Texas will win outright? I'm hopeful, sure. But I think the matchup indicates differently. Yeah, there you go. Truck's leaving. Will you be on it? Bye, strippers. Bye. See ya.
That was actually your engine getting revved up.
Oh, is that mine too? Okay. I like the truck leaving. And that lets you a little bit better. Truck's pulling out. All right. So there we go. I like it. All right. You know what? Andrew's email is good. The second hour of this program, we're gonna shift gears. We're going to shift gears philosophically from Nitpick Tuesday to Positive Tuesday. Andrew has convinced me. And thank you for the email, Andrew. He's convinced me that's what we need to do. So what I want you to think about now for the second hour of the program today, I want you to come up with positive.
Think happy thoughts.
Happy thoughts. Smiley faces, right? I want you to come up with three reasons. Three. And I'm sure you can come up with three. Three reasons why the Patriots will win this Sunday. And that playbook will be back on the airwaves next week. Three reasons why, positive reasons why the Patriots will win their opening round playoff game. Because as I suggested to the PFW guys about this time 1 hour ago, right as they wrapped up their show, as I suggested to them, I have my doubts about this week. I'm going to withhold my pick until Thursday's show. And the reason that I'm going to do that is because right now I'm undecided. I want to see what the player participation reports look like. I want to read what's coming from out of Baltimore this week. I just want to get a feel. I want to hear from the guys in the locker room this week, which is where Eric is now. That's why he didn't stick around the show today, because the locker room is open right now, and they're in there talking to the players. So I want to get a feel for it before I pick this week. But I would tell you that my initial thought is that it will be very hard this week to win. And it's not just because Welker is lost for the year. So we're going to wipe all that out. All the bad stuff, all the bad karma's out, okay? All the nitpicking's gone. Positive Tuesday. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Jason, this will either be a fabulous second hour or it's going to flop miserably, and it'll be nothing but me and the conference calls coming up in the second hour. What do you think it'll be? What do you think?
I'll take 14 and get back to you.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriots season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, not tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehallatpatriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Hour number 2 inside Patriots Playbook on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. John Rook here in the playbook with you. It's the Pats. It's the Baltimore Ravens. It's the AFC wild card game on Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then, of course, if the Patriots win, they will have to go out on the road and face the 2-seed San Diego Chargers. And maybe, yeah, okay. You don't think if the Patriots win, you don't think we're going to get enough of this song next week? I am right now going to call for a ban on that song next week in the show. You may play that, but the San Diego Superchargers fight song? Uh-uh. We're automatically going to go to break every time that song plays.
I don't know. It's kind of funny to watch Andy and Eric dance to it.
Well, that's just gay.
And now, great moments in Patriots playbook history.
That's a keeper. I got to stop listening to my son talk. You see people bang on parents for saying things like that, and their kids pick it up, and that's how you know things keep moving along. That's how biases form. I don't talk like that at home. And I hear my son and his buddies talking like that, and I'm like, that's actually, an appropriate comment, And I'm like, all right, I should say something. And so, I say something to try to be politically correct, and then, of course, I go in the other room and I snicker, or I laugh my ass off, depending upon what it is that, a bunch of 14- and 15-year-old kids are talking about. Oh, Lord. How did we ever get through that age, by the way? How did anybody ever survive being a teenager? Oh, my God. Just so much more difficult nowadays, Anyway. All right. It's hour number 2. It's Positive Tuesday. There are no more nitpicks allowed on the show. Okay? No more. We're not nitpicking anymore. We're not banging on Maroney. We're not lamenting the fact that the Patriots decided to play guys and Wes Welker got hurt. We're not doing any of that. Okay? No. I have asked you specifically, for three positive reasons why you think the Patriots will win this game on Sunday.
I'm just happy to be here.
And the next ones are?
I'm just happy to be here.
Well, there's more than that, though.
I'm just happy to be here.
Oh, come on, come on, come on, come on. Going to win one for the team or, you know, going to, you know, put out. What did he say in the movie? I forgot Kevin Costner's line. It's obviously Bull Durham.
He's totally, I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club.
There you go. There you go. Hope I can help the ball club. And that's the way we all should be, right? We're all just happy to be here. We just hope that we can help the ball club. Three reasons why you think, positive reasons why you think the Patriots will win and advance in the postseason. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. You want to pick up the phone. David from Atlanta. John, I feel that the Patriots have everything they need to beat every team in the playoffs. I can't really think of a single team which is really spiking at the moment. There has always been two Patriots teams, a season Patriots team and a postseason Patriots team. It is impossible to comment because you don't know what they have prepared. You know, that, David, that's for a non-answer, that's a good non-answer. It's a good non-answer. I would argue that, you know, I can think of a team that's spiking. I think San Diego is spiking as well as anybody right now. I think that probably Phillip Rivers is playing as well as any quarterback right now in the NFL. San Diego's matchups, you know, they've got big physical receivers. They match up very well against the Patriots secondary. I don't think that they're overpowering defensively, but, you have to travel all the way out that way. If it comes to that matchup next week, you certainly have to like San Diego's chances. We'll leave that aside because the Patriots have to get this week first before they can even think about next week. Now, I will tell you this. If the Patriots can get by this week, beat Baltimore, and let's just say that somehow, some way, they go to San Diego and win, I believe at least that there's a 50-50 shot that would come back here for the AFC Championship, because I'm not sure that Indianapolis survives either Cincinnati or the Jets. I'm not sure that that happens. And wouldn't that just be an absolute hoot if it were the Jets and the Patriots for the AFC Championship? Would the earth just open up and swallow us all whole? Think of the calamity. Think of the fun that we'd have. Oh, my gosh. That would just be off the hook. I used that one on my son the other day, and he looked at me like I had three heads. Dad, don't say that. Don't say that. What's wrong with off the hook? Am I too old to use that phrase? Is there an age limit on using something that's a little bit hip or a little bit, say, 21st century-ish? Which off the hook, I would guess, would be. Seems like off the hook has probably gone on for, I don't know, a couple of decades at least. Am I right? Am I wrong? Somebody correct me here if I've, you know, got my head under a rock. Let me know. Anyway, that would be off the hook. But I think that there would be at least a reasonable chance for that to happen. Because I don't have any faith in the Colts, you know, basically curling up in the fetal position and losing like they did at Buffalo, for God's sake, which just fired their entire coaching staff. I mean, come on. You can understand the Patriots losing to a pretty good Houston team, but to curl up and die?
Off the hook is probably at least a decade.
Well, that's what I thought. But my son looked at me like, Dad, don't say that. Don't try to be hip. Please don't say that.
Yeah, it's been around probably longer than your son's been speaking.
Yeah, and he's almost 15. So, 15 years somewhere? Yeah. Okay.
I think I was in high school when it came out.
Is that right? God, I feel old now.
So keep saying it.
All right. Adam sends this from his iPhone. All right, Adam. Great. Way to go, kid. First, this may not be the same Pats team, but they rarely lose a home game and especially a home playoff game. Second, all things considered, they are 5-0 all time against the Ravens. All right, that's a good one. Third, the Pats don't make excuses like the Ravens. The Ravens are looking for another excuse, like the Brady rule, to whine after another loss. Go Pats. Okay, good email, Adam. I like that. Three good, positive reasons why this team will win in the playoffs. I like that.
Hello?
We played the game the way we felt like we need to play it.
Okay. That's what it is. Tracy in Vegas sends this note on the San Diego song. I like it. Lose the Mendenhall comment, but keep the San Diego Superchargers song. Oh, Tracy! That's what I get for even reading stupid email. Because Jason plays the song. Somewhere, Andy and Eric are dancing. Together, I might add.
Terrible visual.
It's ugly. It's very ugly. Oh, goodness. All right, Omar from Atlanta. A couple of emailers from Atlanta today. Glad to have you on the program. All right, three reasons for the win. Number one, the return of Fred Taylor and Sammy Morris. Number two, Brady going back to his favorite receiver, the open one. Yeah, now that his other most open one is not there. And number three, the Patriots' uncanny penchant to adapt to whatever circumstance comes their way. Ooh, I like that one, Omar. I may have to save this email and use that later this week. He says, with Welker gone, I still think they'll at least make the AFC Championship game. Then it's anyone's game.
Doesn't this year have the feeling of this team could go to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it does.
Because you don't think they will?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I don't think they will. Therefore, this season kind of has a feel to it like, you know what? Don't be shocked, and I'm sure that there won't be too many fans shocked if they somehow got that far. It sounds bizarre to even say that, much less think it, but I actually see that being somewhat reasonable. Somewhat reasonable. All right, good stuff, Omar. Very good. Very good. Again, your three positive reasons while you think the Patriots will win and advance in the playoffs. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. David in Atlanta, again, goodness gracious. John, I have three reasons for you. Number one, Edelman is an amazing rookie. He is 37 for 359 and an average of 9.7 yards per catch. How many passes do you see him drop? I've only seen him drop a couple that I can recall right off the top of my head this year. Yeah, he's had a solid rookie season. Chances are his numbers would be considerably better than that had he not broken his arm. By the way, I'm going to digress because we like to do that here. Watching that Boise State-TCU game last night, how many passes did the TCU receivers drop in that game? They had to have dropped at least a dozen.
Eight.
More than that. More than that, Bill.
Eight.
Almost 88. Almost. That was the reason that Boise State won the game, because TCU's receivers couldn't hold on to the damn football. It was embarrassing. It was like they'd never seen a football come their way before, ever. But they dropped a ton. They had two touchdown passes that were dropped in that game. Anyway, all right. Good email, David. Thank you. Now, let's see. What do we have here? George, number one, the Ravens defense, still good, but Ed Reed is injured, quotes around the word injured, and playing through it. Allowed Fry and Russell to go 27 for 39 for 282, one touchdown, one pick, and hold the ball for 32 minutes. So it's not up to par. All right. Number two, our offense, just good enough with Moss, Baker, Watson, Falk, Morris, Taylor, Edelman, and, oh, yeah, Tom Brady. Is there any doubt that Kevin Falk will be ready for this week's game? I know he didn't play, but is there any doubt that Kevin Falk will be ready? I don't think so. Like I said, all hands on deck. As long as he's physically able, he'll be there, which might make tomorrow's participation report the most valuable one that we've seen all season long, just so we get a sense of who's actually practicing. But even then, as the PFW guys have said many times, even then it's not a guarantee that a player is going to actually suit up and play on Sunday, depending upon what the participation report says on Wednesday or Thursday. There's no guarantee. None. He says, we're not allowing sacks and running the ball effectively to open the play action to Moss or Watson. Okay. And then he says, number three, the Dimebackers defense. It's been effective against the run. the clear weak point of it, and is just good enough to confuse struggling Flacco if we remove Mason and Heap from his initial reads. Very well thought out, George. I was just going to say that I think that, you know, Todd Heap will probably end up being Joe Flacco's binky. Heap's a talented tight end. I know he's had some injury problems before, but he's certainly a Pro Bowl caliber tight end. And my guess would be, along with Derek Mason, that those would be the two primary targets. And Heap might be the guy that the Patriots should have to target defensively in order to slow them down. They'll be concerned with Ray Rice, who's had a phenomenal year as well. Obviously, he has a Pro Bowl caliber year at running back. And Willis McGahee is healthy enough to do some playing now. So that's a pretty good 1-2 punch in the backfield. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Baltimore go more ball control and try to keep the ball out of the Patriots' hands. I also believe that the Patriots have got to find option B and C, because if I'm Baltimore, there's no doubt that I'm double-teaming Randy. There's no doubt. I'm pulling the safety over the top, and I'm making sure that Moss does not beat us. It's plain and simple. So this is going to be one of those games where you're going to probably see Moss lallygag a little bit or whatever, and the people will probably initially say, oh, look at Moss, he's not into it today. Forget it. Stop that right now. The double team is coming on Sunday. I see it from, 5 days away, and you should see it too. It's coming. It's going to happen. The question is, what do the Patriots do to alleviate that? This is going to be the challenge for the Patriots on offense. Safety is going to be there over the top against Moss. They don't want to get burnt. They're going to make one of the other receivers beat them. It's that simple. This is not rocket science. That's just absolutely no-brainer material. Whether that's Edelman, whether that's Aiken, whether that's Watson or Baker, or even Falk for that matter, it's gonna have to be one of those five guys probably step up and be, the X factor that picks up a majority of the load. Number one, that Welker would have had, and number two, also picks up the slack that's going to come from Randy being double-teamed. So when you talk about Welker going down, the person who had a right to cry as much as anybody other than Welker himself is Randy Moss. Welker and attention to Welker makes Randy a happier guy, and I think you should know that if you didn't already. So now Randy's got to figure out ways to get open against double-teams. Patriots have got a scheme to try to get him open and get him more touches. And another receiver from somewhere of the five guys that I listed has got to come through and not only pick up Welker's slack, but also pick up some of the slack that will be available because the ball can't get to Randy Moss. So that's the scoop on that one. Anyway, good email, George. All right, Nick Caserio, of course, is the Vice President for Player Development, also helps with some of the offensive scheming and game planning, as I just talked about. His conference call yesterday with members of the Patriots media deal with some of this stuff, and let's hear what Nick has to say.
Sure. Now that it appears Julian Edelman will get some playing time, a lot of playing time, you talked about what you saw in him coming in and how you felt he might be able to make the transition to wide receiver, what you saw that would lead you to believe that?
You're saying going back to the spring when we drafted him?
Yes.
Starting there?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the thing about Julian, when you saw him play at Kent State, he was really good with the ball in his hand. I guess you'd call him a dual threat because he ran the ball. I mean, they threw the ball with him as well, but he ran the ball. He was good with the ball in his hand. He's good in space. He was a good runner. He had good quickness. He was a strong runner. So really, you see that particular skill set during the season in the spring as you go through your scouting process and your drafting process. You just try to figure out positionally where that type of player fits best. And in some cases, it's not always going to be at receiver or running back. I mean, you have to do your homework. So, we spent some time with him. We worked him out specifically as a receiver, and we actually did some things with him also in a return game to see if he could field some punts. So there's a little bit of a projection element to it, but in terms of his athleticism, in terms of his running ability, in terms of his quickness, in terms of his strength with the ball, and he actually caught the ball well when we did work him out. So you're basing that information and saying, okay, you know, this is where we feel that he fits best for us. So, I mean, there was a little bit of a leap of faith, but we had done our homework and we felt comfortable, and that's why we made a decision that we did to draft him and play him at receiver.
Nick, this is Dan Dugan from the Herald. I think a lot of people might look at him and say, oh, this is like a Wes Walker clone, but can you talk about some of the things he might do similar and some of the things he does differently than Wes?
Yeah, I think, you know, really they're their own player. I mean, you know, Wes has been a great player. He's been in the league now for a number of years, and, you know, Julian, you're talking about a rookie who really it's his first year playing the position, but I think where they may be similar is I think they're both good with the ball in their hands. You know, Julian's a little bit bigger build, bigger body. He has a little bit more strength to him. You know, so I would say there's some attributes that may be similar, but they're two different types of players, and I think they kind of have two different styles, but I think it shows that, you know, both are equally effective, you know, in their own right.
Nick, how did his experience as a college quarterback maybe help him when it comes to getting on the same page as Tom Brady?
It's probably hard to quantify that. You know, I think as a quarterback, I think the one thing, you just see the game from a particular perspective, but when you move over a few slots, you know, going from under center in the shotgun and to the receiver position, whether it's a slot, you know, which that encompasses a whole number of different things, because I think the number of combination coverages that are played in the NFL, specifically against a lot of different slot receivers, not just Welker, just a lot easier to use some of those combinations as an inside receiver. So maybe just understanding the big picture thing, but really he was starting from ground zero just as far as the receiver position in general, and there's some nuances that you really can't learn and you don't know until you're actually put in that position. And you go through them in practice, you get the game reps, you know, whether it's when do I break the route, how do I break the route, okay, what's the quarterback looking for? I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it. So, I mean, other than maybe having a big picture perspective, you know, I'd say it's probably hard to quantify just playing quarterback and saying that, you know, you feel comfortable at receiver, see the things that a quarterback might see at receiver.
What are some of the important things that the rookies need to know about how the game changes at this time of year when it comes to postseason football?
Yeah, I think you're playing against, number one, the best teams and the best players. And I think the reality is, whether it's a rookie or even a veteran player, regardless, is just the importance of each play. I mean, you have to play each play and realize that one particular play could be the difference in the game. Now, when is that going to happen? Nobody really knows, but in the end, it's going to come down to those six or seven plays, critical plays in the game that really will swing the momentum on the entire game. So just, I think on a play-to-play basis, just playing each play, executing the play as best you can, and then just moving on regardless of the circumstance and realizing that just the level of play is definitely a higher level because you're talking about the best teams in both the AFC and the NFC. So I'd say that's probably, you know, one of the biggest adjustments that any player has to make, whether he's been in the league or maybe hadn't played in the playoffs or he's a rookie.
Nick, can you talk about how you thought Darius Butler played yesterday? He was inactive last week against Jacksonville. This week he's active. You guys have played him a little bit in the slot this year, a little bit outside. Do you feel like heading into the playoffs, you kind of have a sense of what he can do well, what he can, and what situations he's best to use in?
Yeah, I think by this point in the year, we've played whatever it is, 20 games, if you include the preseason. So, I mean, there's a lot of players, you know, Darius in particular, they played a lot of plays. So, you know, Darius had some good plays yesterday. He made nice play interception. You know, he had some plays that could have been better with a lot of players. But, you know, I think when Darius has played, you know, he's been productive. He's made some plays. You know, I think he's certainly learned some things along the way. And, you know, he's playing against some pretty good receivers out there in the perimeter. So, you know, I think we're glad we have him. And, you know, when he's on the field, he's out there for a reason. We feel comfortable. So, I mean, I think whether it's Darius or whether it's any particular player, I think the goal is that everybody playing their best football this time of the year, because in the end, that's really what it's going to, that's what we're going to need in order to win these games here moving forward.
Yeah, if Leth is out, do you have any idea which direction you might go to fill that spot? Would it be something where maybe just a guy like Matthew Slater sees a few more reps at receiver, or do you call somebody up, or do you have any idea on that?
Quite honestly, not yet. You know, I think we're still trying to work through some things. And as I think we get a little bit further into today and into tomorrow, we'll have a better idea. But it's hard for me to answer that right now, quite honestly. So, you know, we'll deal with that when the time is right.
Thank you, Nick.
Great. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it.
All right, Nick Caserio of the Patriots, with members of the Patriots media, shedding a little light, at least philosophically speaking, although, again, so early in the week when you get a chance to, you know, talk to him, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how this week is really going to unfold, and at the time of that conversation, certainly no kind of a game plan for Baltimore had been put up, so it's really hard without a game plan to figure out what your personnel groupings might actually be. But, hey, you know, it's still interesting to get a different perspective and a different take, especially in light of the injury to Welker and such that happened over the weekend. Warren from the UK sent this. He says, I was devastated for Welker. He's been great since the moment he put on the jersey. And also, I truly believe we beat the Ravens and we beat the Chargers. I just really believe we can do it. And that's positive thinking. And I think it will be our running game that will improve the most. All right, so see? Warren gets the idea here. Positive, positive, positive. Got 30 minutes left in the program for today. We have turned Nitpick Tuesday into Positive Tuesday. The power of positive thinking. It's got to help, right? Can't hurt, right? So, three reasons why you think the Patriots will win and advance in the playoffs in spite of everything that we've nitpicked about this season, in spite of all the tragedy that has happened on the field. Well, let's just say unfortunate circumstances. Tragedies, to me, brings in a whole other thought process here. It's tough to be tragic on the football field when there are other things going on in this world, I suppose. But, you know, you get the gist of it. Been some tough times that you've lived through as a Patriots fan. Positive thinking. Three reasons why you think this team will win in the playoffs. All right, so here we go. This one comes from Alejandro, who says, broke my heart to see Welker crying on the sidelines, and I have a Patriots jersey ready for Marcus Pollard. That's actually pretty good, you know. No reason why we shouldn't just try to get him on the Patriots sideline now that he's done things to us now 2 years in a row. Here's the stat I want you to comment on, 2-3, which is the Patriots' record against current playoff teams. Wins, Ravens and the Jets, losses at Jets, at Colts, at Saints. Do you give the Ravens a chance on Sunday? Will the dismal road record be the Patriots' demise in the divisional round? All right. Well, certainly, Alejandro, it looks like that, and that's part of the reason why I feel somewhat uncertain about this week, just because of the loss of personnel from last week. The Ravens, you know, are still a good football team. Yes, the Patriots have a win over the Ravens, but, you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of feel it a little bit, that you can kind of feel things coming unglued. It can really go either way. It can be a tremendous success, and somehow this team finds its way into a championship game, or it can just all come unglued on the field this week. And frankly, I'm still 24 to 48 hours away before definitively deciding which one of those scenarios is going to unfold. I certainly, yes, give the Ravens a chance on Sunday. I do also think that the road record, as dismal as it has been, will be a factor. You know, you throw a lot of the regular season stuff out because the playoffs have a lot more emotion involved. And when emotion is involved, that's when, you know, it's like rivalries. We talked about this earlier. It's like rivalries. You just kind of throw everything out the window. And it's the teams, when emotion really gets amped up, it's the team that is able to control their emotion the best and make fewer mistakes that wins. Mistakes become much more amplified in championship/playoff/games with meaning, rivalry games. So in this instance, whichever team is going to make the fewest mistakes is going to win here on Sunday. That's what it's going to boil down to. Usually does in a playoff scenario. All right, let's pause for a timeout. Web radio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482. Be positive. No negative. Be positive. Three positive reasons I think the Patriots will advance in the playoffs.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. And I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America NA member PIC. Copyright 2009 Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
Why not?
In every life we have
Bobby McFerrin,
trouble.
Right? Yeah, thought so.
When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Now, this was 1988, roughly. Yeah, thought so. Ha! So it's been a while, 21 years. Can you believe it's been that long since this was a hit?
He did a best of disc in 96.
And this was on it, obviously. Right. Well, you know what? It's good choice. Good choice because, frankly, you know what? We're in the playoffs. Team's in the playoffs. And yet, I don't sense any sense of satisfaction, maybe with the exception of the guys down in the locker room. I'm sure they're satisfied. You know, but
they're not satisfied unless they have a ring.
Well, that's the ultimate what do you call it? What am I looking for here? The ultimate satisfying moment. the ultimate satisfaction. But I think that, you know, because of what happened last year and the way that Miami sort of sprung on everybody, the fact that they at least won a division championship, reclaimed, if you will, the AFC East, which I'm sure they all feel like was theirs anyway, I'm sure there is some satisfaction to that. And there really should be, I think, some satisfaction to that amongst, you know, the Patriots fans. Fact is that the decade of the 2000s, the aughts, if you will, it's been a great decade for this franchise. It has been the decade that put this franchise in position to be considered one of the dominant teams in the National Football League. This is the decade when the Patriots became a dynasty. And I know we talked about this earlier this season about, you know, whether or not what the Patriots actually accomplished should be considered dynastic compared to, the Steelers or even the Colts I mentioned. You know, everybody outside, you know, Bill Polian, no one outside of Bill Polian really believes, and maybe Tony Dungy and Peyton Manning, nobody really believes that the Colts were the dynasty of this decade.
Did you hear the new little Bill Polian scandal?
What did he do now?
So his radio show is usually accessible on the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently this week's show was not. That one of the stations was playing rock music instead of his show on the link, and the other station, the link, mysteriously didn't seem to function.
Wow. Maybe because he just didn't want it to. That would be my guess. That, you know, save for, you know, doing it in front of the hometown fans, you know, on Indianapolis radio, he didn't want to catch crap from everybody else on the World Wide Web. Smart man. Nobody said Polian was stupid. You could certainly question some of his moves, not his motives. You know? I wish the playoffs had turned out differently. I mean, that's the one team other than the Jets. That's the one team that I personally would really like to see the Patriots play is the Colts. You know, I guess if the Colts win out, which I frankly don't think they will, but if they did and the Patriots had to go, you know, to Lucas Oil Field for the AFC Championship game, I wouldn't be upset with that at all. I don't think too many Patriots fans would be upset with that at all because you'd have a chance to, you know, take them down. I think that'd be great. I think I'd really love to see that happen. You know, but getting back to the original thought there, I really kind of feel like, you know, there should be more, if not celebrated, should be more acknowledged about what the team has accomplished this year. Hey, I'm the one that called this Positive Tuesday on the second hour of the program here, so, you know, I'm trying to be positive here.
Don't worry, be happy.
That's exactly right. Should give them some credit for what they were able to overcome and achieve this year, right? Kind of how I look at it. That's why I wanted you to chip in. We've had some good ones trickling in here. Got a few more to give you here in terms of emails, webradio@patriots.com. Three reasons why you think the Patriots will win this week and move on in the playoffs. Hey, it's 1 week at a time here. I realize some of you want to look ahead in San Diego and Indianapolis or Jets or Cincinnati or whatever. 1 week at a time. We're going to focus on it. 1 week at a time, just like the guys in the locker room. 1 week at a time. This week, three positives. Three reasons why you think this team will win and move on. Matt, Brooklyn Matt. Number one, 11-0 at home in the playoffs since 1978 when Earl Campbell, Dan Pastorini, and Bum Phillips came to town. That's a good one. Number two, the possibilities of dumps to Falk in space, Maroney finding purpose in his running and recreating the 2007 AFC Championship game form, and Big Ben catches in the end zone, of which there have been more than a good share. Give the guy credit for them. All right? Duly noted. And number three, TFB. The quarterback position looms large in the postseason. Nice. He also gives me a four. The fact that Scalavino has already jumped ship, pull a George Costanza, and do the opposite of whatever Eric does, and you'll be in good shape. Rock on, John, from Brooklyn, Matt. All right, Matt, thank you. Come on, don't bang him a man. Don't bang him a man, Eric, here. Eric's been a good contributor to the program, and he'll rejoin us tomorrow. Chris, he's actually in the locker room talking to the guys right now, so we'll ask him. We'll get his take on the mood and some of the thoughts of the guys tomorrow as well here on the program. Chris in Seattle says, all right, three reasons. Here we go, three positives. Number one, Belichick and Brady. Number two, running game peaking. Mm-hmm. As opposed to not peaking? Okay, I can see that. And number three, the rest of the AFC is not as good as in recent years either, except maybe. Don't do it. San Diego. Don't do it. He wants to do it.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
Okay, that one I can live with. That one I can live with. Says, I was home in Rhode Island for Christmas and did get to go to the Jacksonville game. Huh, cool. So no matter what happens, I'll have that fantastic memory. The Randy Love Fest was refreshing. No doubt about that, Chris.
Did you see that we posted that video on Patriots.com?
Yeah, was that the video from the scoreboard stuff that you guys shot?
That was the jumbo feed.
Nice. Yeah, that was funny. If you have it, is it still up there? I'm sure you can get it in archive,
yeah, I'm
right?
sure you can find it in the video archive, but yeah. It's up there in its entirety.
We talked about this a lot during last week's show. It was one of the singularly funniest things that I have witnessed in the stadium in the 17 years that I have worked for this franchise. Funny. Just downright laugh-out-loud funny. The funniest part of it actually comes after the fact when we find out the kid who wore the mask is 12 years old. Now that is flipping hysterical. And here's Randy, you know, mocking and dancing with this 12-year-old kid in the stands. Fantastic. So if you haven't had a chance to see it or missed it last week by some chance, yeah, go hit the video archives here on Patriots.com and do yourself a favor. You know, some of it is really laugh-out-loud funny stuff, so it's good stuff. All right, Chris, absolutely. All right, three good positives right there, pal. Way to contribute. All right, this is from Sheila in Clearwater. Hello, Sheila. Let's be simple. The three reasons are Tom Brady, Randy Moss, and Bill Belichick. Belichick's brain, I am sure we will see the Patriots do things that have not been seen during the season. Brady's arm. History shows he will not buckle under pressure. And number three, Moss's hands. They will double him as usual, but without Welker, the Ravens have no idea what routes he will run or what role he will play. You know, Sheila, that's a good email. That's really good. Simple yet effective. I like that. Belichick's brain. Let me kind of pick this apart a little bit, only because, frankly, this year we haven't seen a lot of imagination. I think that's been one of the things that we've banged on about this team all year long, is a lack of imagination, especially on offense. I think we'd all love to see a little bit of a wrinkle. Certainly, you know, the Patriots have to have something, anything cooking for the Ravens since they've played each other. So the Ravens are going to go back and look at the game film, you know, and figure out what they did wrong and figure out a way to beat the Patriots based on when they played here, you know, what was it, 6 weeks ago almost? Yeah, roughly. So in that case, having something different to throw at the Ravens is imperative if you want to win the football game. Now that you're a little bit more shorthanded and you can't rely on one of your primary weapons on offense with Welker's absence, it demands it if you want to win the football game. And, of course, defensively, well, you know, I think the Patriots probably feel like if they get their healthy bodies back, if that includes a relatively healthy Wilfork and Warren in the middle, I think they probably feel like, you know, we got enough there where we can, you know, subdue Ray Rice, not allow him to go nuts, and hopefully find a way to put a little bit of a marker or a shadow on a guy like Todd Heap and make sure that, you know, Mason doesn't beat you deep. And you know, maybe what you do here is maybe you play, you know, 7-8 in the box here, and you make Joe Flacco try to go over the top and beat you. Maybe that's the way you go. Because I'm sure that there will be some question as to whether or not, accuracy-wise, he can do that. Might be worth a thought. And you're right about Moss's hands, Sheila. Yeah, the double's going to come. I said that earlier in the show. You know it's going to come. It's an absolute given. So what role will he play if the Ravens are going to definitely commit two men? My guess is they'll try to have two guys with him, and so Randy's going to get ready to do a lot of running. Doesn't it stand to reason that he will just run and run and run some more? They want him to stretch the field, and they want the corner to go with him, and they want the safety over the top, so that leaves one less in the box to hit him underneath with. Whether it's the running game, which I certainly like the Patriots in a big dose of, or number two, whether it's some kind of a short passing game where you maybe dink and dunk to guys like Falk, maybe you find Edelman if he runs the right routes, who knows? certainly the tight end. The tight end hasn't been in play much at all this year, and that's been one of our biggest laments of the entire season, is the inactivity of the Patriots tight end in the offense. They basically have forgotten about Watson and especially about Chris Baker. If somehow we could find the inclusion of the tight end as a significant factor in the offensive scheme, I think the Patriots have as good a shot as any. We just hadn't seen that. We saw it a little bit against Jacksonville. And I think we talked about that a bit last week. But we saw it a little bit. It was back a little bit. And it was good to see. It's going to have to be back more than just a little bit because, again, as I mentioned earlier, there's five key guys that really are going to be forced to take up the slack, not only from Welker's absence, but the slack from Randy being doubled and fewer balls getting into him. The ball will be thrown in his direction. Make no mistake. It'll be thrown. It'll be up to the Ravens to cover it. It'll be up to Randy to go up and get it. And sometimes the Patriots might just throw deep just to stretch the defense, realizing that, hey, he's not going to get this. That wouldn't surprise me at all if that happened. So those are other things to consider. Good email, Sheila. And let me get this one in from Sean here. Sean says, all right, reason number one, three positive reasons here for the Patriots on Sunday. Number one, Tom Brady will become 100% in sync with all of his receivers, regardless of who they are. Oh, from your keyboard to you-know-whose ears. Number two, the defensive backs will become shutdown cornerbacks, and the linebackers will sack the quarterback regularly. Well, again, from your keyboard to, God's ears, but let me suggest this. I think you know this. Flacco is a big, strong guy. Tough to bring him down. And when you couple that with the fact the Patriots have not exactly been menacing, rushing the opposing passers this year, number two is going to be hard to come by, Sean. Number three, Sean says the O-line will open up holes and the running backs will explode. Maybe. Maybe. I've always thought that the Patriots' offensive line is much better as a run unit than a pass-protecting unit. Those guys like to fire off and go at it full steam ahead. If we can get the running backs to jump into those holes, create a little space for themselves, then, all things are good. Fred Taylor showed us, a couple of weeks ago that, frankly, I think that he has still the ability to get around the corner, that he's not really showing any ill effects of the ankle injury from earlier this year. So I like that. I really like an inside possibility with Morris and or Maroney and then getting outside with Taylor, although Taylor certainly has the capability of going between the tackles as well. I like the mix. And as long as, again, everybody is healthy, I see all three of those guys getting time on Sunday. And then certainly then there's Falk. Falk is the huge X factor because he's the valuable receiver coming out of the backfield. Passing downs, yes, but I'd like to see Falk in there on a first or second down just to kind of throw a little bit of a kink in the works and to get Baltimore thinking. He has to have a couple of carries. And by the way, Sean says Wes Welker will come back from injury. Another positive that he just kind of threw in there, but he says he believes Welker will come back. I hope that's the case. I most definitely hope that is the case. He says also, John, in reference to the earlier email, the 2011 first-round pick, isn't there a possibility of a rookie salary cap in 2011? How about that affordable franchise running back or monster outside linebacker? Yeah, I would think that part of any agreement, and again, if 2010 ends up being an uncapped year next year, 2011 would be the lockout season, potentially, if no agreement is reached. The owners have threatened to lock the players out, and we would have no football, and obviously no playbook in 2011. We hope that that doesn't happen. But I think that if part of any agreement, because of the deal, I think that Matt Ryan signed last year with Atlanta, that there's been more and more momentum from ownership, that there's got to be some kind of a cap for rookies. And that the players, I think, will grudgingly give into that simply because, you've got veteran players now, guys who have had their money, who will agree to this and feel like, you're probably right. If that's one thing the owners can do to contain some costs, that's something I think the players will ultimately concede on, is the rookie cap. I think they just about have to. So, at any rate, that certainly it certainly bears watching, I think, over the course of the next few weeks and months. Ben from Boxborough says, can you rank the rookies' performances this season? Now that we finished the regular season, whose role will increase next year or even in the playoffs this year? I'm especially interested in Butler because of his crazy 91-yard interception return, as well as Edelman because of Welker's injury. Anyway, I hope you are as psyched for the playoffs as I am. Go Pats. Well, you know, we're still in the season. Obviously, in terms of rookie performances, Edelman's performance is going to figure most prominently because he's replacing, you know, a Pro Bowl player. He's had a good rookie season. I think the fact that he, you know, was a seventh-round draft pick and now is going to become a primary target for Tom Brady in the postseason makes his season extraordinary in relation to perhaps some other rookies. But let's not go over the boat. You know, Julian Edelman still has a lot to learn about being a receiver or even a kick returner in the NFL. But the fact is, it's clear to see the young man has smarts. He has savvy. And he's willing to do whatever it takes, and you got to have more guys like that on your team. That, in fact, is why this Patriots and how this Patriots franchise was built as a dynasty in this decade, with a lot of guys who have the same thought process as Julian Edelman. Butler is a unique case because I think we've seen flashes of his brilliance all season long, and then every once in a while he gets toasted for one. And so with rookies, it happens. They ride that roller coaster. Some days they're up, others they're down. And they continue to ride the roller coaster, and you can only hope that by the end of the rookie season there are more ups than downs, and that there are you know, more positives, and that you can see at the very least a gradual progression. A gradual progression of improvement in a rookie. Butler, I think, is certainly a guy that you have to keep around for a while. And continue to let him try to improve. Give him an opportunity. I'd give him an opportunity to return kicks as well, but I think the Patriots will probably try to address that this year in the offseason. Two guys, as I'm thinking about that, and I'm looking over the monitor, and you know the ESPN guys were already at the Rose Bowl, you know, talking about the Texas-Alabama game on Thursday. Two guys that Texas has that I think would be perfect in roles for the Patriots next year. One is Sergio Kendall. Outside, you know, linebacker. I think that he could be made for that speed rusher in a Patriots 3-4, number one. He probably would be around in a late first, second round, late first to early to mid second round scenario for the Patriots to get. And number two is Jordan Shipley, wide receiver and kick returner. You know, he's returned a couple of kicks for kickoffs. He's dangerous with punts. And, oh, yeah, he was, you know, a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award as the nation's top receiver in college football. And he would also be available in the second round. I think that both of those guys, Kendall, I think, has a chance at being a first-rounder. Again, depends on the combine, which I'm sure he'll go. And if he measures, you know, mad crazy numbers, my guess is his stock will rise. But I think, you know, even though he technically plays a down defensive end, Kendall translates to being an outside linebacker in the pros with his size and certainly with his speed. And, you know, Kendall would certainly be worth a look for the Patriots, as would Jordan Shipley. Now, I know that pains strippers for me to say that, but they would both fill specific roles that the Patriots will have a need for next year. Shipley already would be your guy in terms of being a potential, you know, number three receiver. Now, you may have to go out and find a two because you don't have Welker next year, which is why I think the Patriots will definitely go free agency, if not the draft. I don't know if a rookie is ready to step in and be, you know, the backup guy for Randy Moss at wideout. I don't know if that's something that you really need to pin on a rookie. You know, that might actually be unfair to do. But I could see a guy like Shipley or anybody else, for that matter, come in and be a three receiver, you know, if, of course, you know, they've got the talent. He's got the talent. He's got the speed. So those are two guys that you could watch on Thursday night. If either of them has a particularly good game, you know, then their stock will continue to rise. But I think they would both be around certainly in that late first, you know, into the midway portion of the second round for the Patriots to have an opportunity to take. One of them could even slip to late in the second round when the Patriots pick again after their, I think I saw the breakdown, And again, you have to wait and see how the playoffs will finish up. But I think the Patriots right now are slotted 25th, if I'm not mistaken. I think 25th in the draft order out of 32. Both of those guys, I think, would be there at 25. Certainly Shipley would be. Kendall might be. So, anyway, just a thought. Just a thought. Okay. Howard. This is John. Okay. It's John in South Carolina who says, reasons to believe, leaving out Brady, Bill, and Moss. Ooh, that's tough. John, what are you doing? He says, one, our offensive line is getting healthy, and Vollmer is a great addition. Well, I agree with that one. Number two, our defense is getting more pressure on the quarterback. They can pressure the outside, add Will Fork and Warren back. We could do some damage, okay? Number three, Edelman, Watson, and Baker, and a reemerging running game. Fill the void left by Welker. Number four, the Ravens' defense is not as good as it once was. And if we beat them earlier this year, we can beat them this time. Okay. And number five, he says, the Patriots held this team to 115 yards total rushing. Our defense is better now, providing Will Fork and Warren return, and that was in week four. We are not done yet. The Pats don't need to be afraid of the Ravens. The Ravens need to be afraid of the Pats. All right, John. Way to go. Good, solid reasons to believe. Andrew, three positive reasons. Belichick's coaching. Yes, he has made some questionable calls this year, fourth and two, obviously, but he never backs down. He has no fear. He doesn't second guess. He is too prepared and ready for every possible opportunity. The Ravens will not. That comes from experience. Number two, result of Belichick's coaching. He will find new ways to, one, use Randy, two, utilize Ben Watson and Chris Baker, and three, take advantage of their four-headed monster, Maroney, Falk, Taylor, Morris.
You know, the receivers have a lot of balls.
They're going to need them on Sunday. And number three, he says, call me crazy. Okay, you're crazy. Banta Kane and Sean Springs will come up big. Banta Kane will pressure Flacco, and Springs will cash in at least one interception. Again, experience will be the difference. All right, we got some guys going out here making calls. We've had, you know, ladies making calls. Three positive reasons, big positives, as to why the Patriots will win on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. There was one more email here I wanted to read. Let me see if I can find it. It came in a little bit earlier. Pardon me while I digress here and try to find this. Well, okay. Oh, here we go. This one comes from James in Brisbane, Australia. He says, as for playoff seeding, I'm very happy with the third seed as opposed to the fourth seed for the simple reason that if we can get past Baltimore and San Diego, the latter is not likely but possible, I can see us hosting the AFC Championship game against the Bengals or Jets, mostly because I feel that Indy has lost a lot of its momentum in the past 2 weeks, and as history has shown in 05 and 07 especially, they tend to struggle when they snooze into the playoffs. Spot on there, Big James. Spot on. He says, I'm still totally on board and believe in this team's chances, so let's just enjoy these next few weeks. Could not have said it better myself, James. It's going to put a wrap on this edition of Patriots Playbook. We'll be here again tomorrow, same patch time, same patch channel. Eric Scalavino from PFW will also be around. Sure, we'll start getting to a little bit more of the specific talk about matchups and game planning and specifics for the Baltimore Ravens, as it is a rematch from earlier in the season when the Patriots won here at home. But it's the second season now, baby. Anything can happen. Best thing is the Patriots are in the dance. We'll deal with that starting tomorrow.